Welcome back to the Love Well podcast. Good to have you with me this week. Let's see. What's happening? It's snowing. It's cold and it's miserable. Welcome to Michigan in February, right? it's finally winter here, and I'm ready for summer to hit full on next week. College baseball kicks off, so all will be right in my world. With real baseball starting up again here soon. So, couple of announcements, things you might want to be aware of. Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock in downtown Ypsilanti, Michigan at the Tap Room, my friend Mike and I host a conversation called Doubt on Tap. Doubt on Tap it's a weekly gathering of people from all kinds of different backgrounds talking about things that matter. We are theists and atheists and everything in between, and it's a great hour to come and talk about things that matter and learn from one another and hear from one another. And so I hope that you'll consider coming out and joining us Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock. Mike and I also host a podcast called The Simple Theologian Podcast, so grab that wherever you listen to podcasts. It's there for you. And I think it's getting better as time goes on. Our earlier episodes were pretty lousy, not quite as lousy as the early episodes of this podcast, which I think we're getting better here too. And so I would encourage you to grab a hold of the Simple Theologian Podcast and give it a listen. But more importantly, I'd encourage you to come join us Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock at the Tap Room in downtown Ypsilanti, Michigan. Also, if you want to learn more about my church planting network that I give some leadership to, called the Acts 13 Network, we're having our annual meeting this Sunday, February 9th at 5 o'clock. We are being graciously hosted by Fellowship Evangelical Presbyterian Church in South Lyon, Michigan. You can look that up on the Google machine and join us 5 o'clock. We'll have pizza. We'll have some sides and things. Just bring a little something to throw into the mix. We'd appreciate that. And you'll get a chance to meet some great people and hear about the future direction of what we call the Antioch movement. There's some really fun changes on the way. So that's what's coming. There's some things to be aware of. And let's see. I will be speaking February 16th. For a few weeks, for a few Sundays even after that, February 16th, 10 a.m., at Peace Presbyterian Church in Flint. I'll be speaking on 1 John for a number of weeks there, so would love for you to come out if you're interested in hearing me talk a little bit about the letter to 1 John. That would be fantastic. Also, we've got missional communities happening all over the place now. Besides Doubt on Tap, we have one in the Creekside East neighborhood in Ypsilanti, Michigan. That's Sunday nights at 6 p.m. And then we also have one meeting in Fowlerville, Michigan. That's Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Both start with dinner, include times with the scriptures and communion and different things happening and prayer and all that good stuff. So, we'd love for you to join us in one of those spaces as well if you're looking for a way to connect in community. So, let's get on with it, shall we? We talked last week a little bit about spiritual disciplines and how there are two categories really of spiritual disciplines, and that's disciplines or practices of abstinence and disciplines or practices of engagement. And so this week, what I want to do is walk us through the different disciplines of abstinence. But before we get there, I want to just remind you again, kind of reorient us again of where this stuff's coming from. And, the idea is that Jesus in Mark chapter 8, he talks about how we as his followers need to deny ourselves and take up our cross daily. He says, if you want to come after me, those are kind of the two things. And And I think in American Christianity, we do a great job of giving people practices to take up their crosses, right? And remember, practices, disciplines, are to get us ready for game day. They are to get us ready for that moment when we are caught unaware, when life kind of comes from the blind spot and hits us, and we gotta respond, and we have to respond with grace and love and truth in a way that would honor Christ. That's not easy. It's not easy. And what that does is it unveils who we are. It really shows who we are. Unlike what some folks have been saying recently, that personal integrity and character and things are not reflected in our private moments, the scriptures are pretty clear that they are. And the way of Christ is reflected in those private moments, in those moments out of the spotlight. And so we need to be ready. We need to be ready for those moments, for those times when life comes at us. And we do that through practice. We do that through using spiritual disciplines to build us up, to strengthen us. It's kind of like the spiritual gym, right? So I want to ask you a couple questions. When was the last time you denied yourself something? Think about it. It's a really, really hard question, especially for us who are Americans. And I don't mean like, oh, you denied yourself some dessert, right? I mean, dude, I get it. I'm chronically overweight, and I'm trying hard, and so I deny myself dessert all the time. I deny myself a lot of different things that I really want to have, but that's not what I'm talking about. I mean like something substantial. If you're anything like me, I have a hard time really answering that question, because I'm not in the business of denying myself much of anything. And honestly, it doesn't really matter what it is. It really doesn't. I mean, I'm on this diet. I'm changing the way that I'm eating and different things. And I've found like my weakness is ice cream. Like I love ice cream. And so what's the first thing I do is I go out and try to figure out what's the ice cream alternative. And, you know, by God, I figured it out. So, some of you might be thinking about, you know, times you didn't have the resources to get something you wanted. But what I want you to think about is a time when you had the resources, the ability, the time to get what you wanted in a particular moment, but you decided to deny yourself. That's a much, much more difficult question, right? That's the hard one. Mark 8, 34 through 38, which we already kind of talked about, is one of my favorite passages when I think about the spiritual disciplines. And it's because Jesus kind of gives us this image. He gives us kind of these marching orders, right? The let, you know, deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow him. We have to figure out how to do these things. And in my experience in the Christian subculture, we have largely glossed over the deny yourself part and have just gone right on to to take up your cross, because man, that's kind of sexy. That there's something cool about being able to say, yeah, I'm gonna take up my cross, here I go. And oftentimes that's even been packaged in like kind of this martyr image, right? This idea of, you know, persecution kind of stuff. And I think the other reason is that the take up the cross part, it speaks easily to the brokenness that we experience in our world. I mean, you know, you get sick, or your loved one gets sick, or we come face to face with brokenness in this world all the time. And so when we hear take up our cross, it's like, yeah, I get that. I get entering in. And I'm not entirely certain that's what Jesus is talking about there, but it still, I think, in some sense speaks to that. But when it comes to deny yourself, man, it's just not something that we talk about. It doesn't bring in the crowds, right? I mean, as pastors, we don't really want to be the guy that's talking about denying yourself. Our culture is centered on like immediate gratification, and so, you know, I think that if we all had kind of an inner monologue translator, and especially like I think about myself, one of the things that would come out loud and clear is gimme 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 now. I think that's why so many of us, when we read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as kids, we identify with Veruca Salt. I mean, she was so spoiled and so selfish. I want. Like, we get that. But over the last few months, as I'm revisiting these spiritual disciplines, I've really become challenged by the disciplines of abstinence. These practices help in practicing self-denial. And when I say self-denial, I want to be very clear here. I'm not talking about denying reality, right? You know, not that kind of self-denial, but in the sense of denying our wants and desires in the immediate moment. It's kind of this idea of, you know, we need to figure out how to practice self-control. I think that's where self-denial is rooted in. And because we've set this aside, you know, because we've largely set aside the practices of abstinence and self-denial and self-control, we see the impact on the local church. So many churches are just absolutely given over to the whims and wishes of the masses. I mean, they really are centers dispersing religious goods and services. That's why I think you look at a lot of churches and they're loaded down with programs and projects, and they're all trying to build buildings and spaces that will attract and make people feel comfortable and that kind of thing. Because they want to meet the felt needs of the crowd. They want to grow the crowd. They need to grow the crowd. There's almost this compulsion in some of my colleagues to have a bigger and bigger and bigger crowd to speak to. And here's the thing. They know that if they don't do this stuff, the crowd is just going to go right on down the street to the next church, to the next place. That will meet their needs, that will placate their wants and their desires. A guy I follow on Twitter, Dan White Jr., he says this. He said this in a tweet, and I thought it was really insightful. He says, in a consumer-oriented time, it becomes utterly normal for people to demand the benefits of community without the inconvenience of commitment. Because the inconvenience of commitment is absolutely 100% completely rooted in self-denial and in self-control. We have to practice that if we're going to be committed, because a commitment to a community oftentimes requires putting others ahead of ourselves. And we've become very, very, very poor at practicing self-control and self-denial. And so let's take a few minutes and let's just look. I'm going to riff on each of these six or seven or so practices of abstinence. But before I do, let's take a little break for a word from our sponsor. All right, we're back for part two here. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, the little sponsored segment thing. It's weird to me, but uh, it you know, it's kind of cool to see a little bit of jingle kind of trickle in there for doing this little podcast. So I hope that doesn't annoy you too much, but me probably talking about it is super annoying. Anyway, all right, back to the episode. So what are the practices of abstinence? Well, there's seven kind of key practices of abstinence that we're going to hit on. Solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy, and sacrifice. Solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy, and sacrifice. Seven things. So first, solitude. Number one, solitude. Solitude is us getting away, getting by ourselves, getting to a space where we just are alone. And you know, you look through the stories of Jesus, right? You see him doing this. You see the disciples will wake up and be like, "Where'd he go?" And then they go find him in the wilderness. Jesus just would go and he would get away on the regular. This practice of solitude. This honestly might be one of the most subversive things that we can do in our culture today. I mean, I know many of us, many people are alone a lot, in the sense where maybe they're you know, you're working alone or you're working on your own, that kind of thing. But we're not very often in solitude. And that's because we all have these phones. We all have these devices in our pocket that keeps us ever connected to everybody else that we know. It's constantly buzzing and dinging and vibrating. And man, we are always connected. We are always plugged in. And so we need to get away and we need to get alone. Now, for me, this is so hard because I'm an extrovert, and so whenever I try to practice solitude, whenever I try to really disconnect and get alone, and kind of turn things off, oftentimes what happens is I just fall asleep. I get really bored and I fall asleep. And I think there's maybe there's a chance that I'm just exhausted and need rest, which I think sometimes is true. I think there are definitely seasons. There have been seasons in my life where I've just, you know, I've burned the candle at both ends and I'm just wore out and I need a nap. I need some rest. But I think too often sleep is simply a tool of avoidance. It allows me to avoid being alone. It allows me to avoid just being. I want that connection so badly. And yet when I've actually been able to enter into the solitude, when I've actually been able to create some disconnect, some alone time, this has been some of the sweetest times of fellowship with God that I've experienced. There's a deep connection there that I can't explain. I find myself to be way more creative. Things seem to flow. Ideas come, and so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that as I spend more time in solitude, as I seek to be more intentional about that, that kind of thing will happen more. Just a greater connection to the flow, so to speak, and really being way more aware of God's presence. But I can't do that with my phone ever present in my hand and always notifying me of things that are happening. And with connected to solitude is silence. That's the second thing. So we got number one, solitude. Number two, silence. Silence is, again, an absolutely subversive act. Oftentimes when I get alone, when I'm having some solitude, I'll have music running or something along those lines, which is fine, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, solitude is really the practice of getting alone. And so if I need music, I need music. But one of the other things that can be really powerful is when you combine solitude and silence. When you turn the music off, when you turn the sounds off, when you really just get absolutely quiet and you try to shut it down, you try to shut all the noise of this world off. We live in an unbelievably loud world. Everywhere we go is noise, 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 visual, audio, stimulus, all the time, everywhere we go. And there are times where we need silence. We need to shut it all down. We need to get quiet. When we get quiet, when I get quiet, it freaks me out, because then I can hear my thoughts. Oh, and I hear that tape running, and I got to figure out how to silence that. I don't know if there's anything more frightening than silence. It's so uncomfortable. It's so uncomfortable. But again, what silence does is it allows us to listen. It gets us to a place where maybe, just possibly, we can hear from God. That's a pretty amazing thing. The third thing is fasting. So solitude, silence, fasting. Now, before I go on, I want you to hear me loud and clear. When we talk about fasting, fasting is not something that should be done in a vacuum. There's some different ways that you can practice fasting. The most common way is to fast from food. If you are going to fast from food, do not do that lightly. Do not just do that on your own. Don't just decide one day, well, I'm gonna not eat today. No, if you are going to practice fasting, please do so under the observation and watchful eye of your doctor. Some of you may not be in a position physically where fasting is going to be wise for you. Or it's going to be healthy, or it may hurt you more than help you, right? So that's the fasting disclaimer, and I mean it in all seriousness. Do not fast from food lightly. You need to do it under the auspices of your doctor. So that said, fasting is the intentional decision to forego something, to say nope, I'm not gonna engage in that. And throughout the history of the church and many other religious traditions, fasting from food is a central thing. There is a season of fasting within Islam, right? We have a number of different fasts in the Christian calendar. The two most famous are Advent and Lent, two fasting seasons, And so I would, you know, so fasting from food, what that does is it shows us how absolutely and completely and utterly dependent we are on this thing, and how we take control of something along those lines. And so what fasting does is it breaks the control that something has on us. So maybe you need to fast from food for a day or two, and again under the watchful eye of your doctor, to simply try to show yourself how much control food has over you. Maybe it's social media, maybe it's entertainment, maybe for some of you it's exercising. Maybe some of you, you know, you have this idol of exercise and working out, and you need to take a couple of days and intentionally fast from it. Maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's marijuana. Maybe it's tobacco. I don't know. Whatever it might be, whatever might have control over you, fast from it for a few days and see what happens. See what happens when you fast. Fasting is so important, because what it does is it begins to break down the idols that are in our lives. Idols are things that we worship through our actions, through the way that we give them control over our daily lives. And so fasting is really helpful. It's a helpful discipline to make us aware of the things that have too much control over us. And then there's frugality. So solitude, silence, fasting. Number four is frugality. And this is where we intentionally choose to not spend money, right? You choose to withhold your resources on stuff that you want, you know? Maybe you want that shirt or those jeans or that device, that car, that house, whatever it might be, depending on your income level. What does frugality look like? What is choosing to say, no, I'm going to learn contentment in this moment? And that's what frugality does. Frugality teaches us contentment. It teaches us to be happy with what has already been provided. And it helps us to be able to identify the differences between needs and wants, right? Very difficult thing to do in today's culture and society is to differentiate between needs and wants. You know, I don't need that shiny object. I don't need that next shiny object. I don't need that next thing because my current device works just fine. That's a tough one for me. I have serious shiny object syndrome. And so frugality, it teaches us contentment. And the other thing it does is it puts us in position to be able to practice a spiritual practice of engagement in giving. That's something that we will talk about elsewhere. But it's frugality allows us to give and begins to put us in a position, to serve and different things along those lines. So you've got solitude, silence, fasting. Number four, frugality. Number five, chastity. Ooh, chastity, let's be chaste, right? You know, every time I hear chastity, I think of I think of the movie Spaceballs and, the princess's chastity belt, and it just cracks me up. So oftentimes we think of chastity only in the context of virginity, and oftentimes female virginity, and that's not really what chastity is about. The abstinence practice of chastity is choosing to forgo sexual pleasure for a period of time. If you are in a relationship, if you're married, this is a decision that not one spouse makes on their own. It is a decision that spouses make together. This is a form of fasting. You choose as a married couple, we're going to intentionally forgo sexual pleasure for a period of time of prayer, of going before the Lord and practicing this and learning to be content in our relationship and growing our relationship and intimacy beyond the physical. Our world is our world says intimacy is rooted in physical, in the physical, and it's not. There's more to it. Is physical, is sex important in a marriage? Yeah, it's super important. Physical intimacy is a critical component of a healthy marriage, but there's more to it. Intimacy goes beyond that, and so what chastity does is it allows you to practice that and develop that and grow your intimacy over a period of time. But this is a conscious decision. This is not we haven't had sex in 6 weeks because life has been super busy and, it just hasn't been convenient. That's not chastity. That's not what we're talking about here. No, we're talking about, a married, a couple saying, okay, I will practice this. Or a single saying, I will practice this so that I can grow in contentment and I can grow in my relationship with God. by denying myself sexual pleasure for this period of time. So solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy. We live in a social media saturated world, don't we? It is everything we do, we record. If there's no picture, did it really happen? If there's no video, did it really happen? This tends to be the way we do life. We record everything, we post everything, and we say we do it because we want our family to know and this kind of thing. But let's be honest, we want the attention. We want people to see us and go, hey, y'all did a great thing there. Way to go. We want the kudos. We want that rush of people acknowledging what we have done. Well, the spiritual discipline, the spiritual practice of secrecy says, no, I don't need that. I will be content in God knowing. Be content in God knowing. I don't need the world to know. I can just simply serve. I can simply go about my life. I can simply go do these things without everybody knowing. And so it's an intentional turn from the spotlight. It's an intentional turn to say, I will practice this without the attention. And in our social media world, that is such a hard thing. That's such a hard thing to do. And so it might be that for a period of time, you're going to practice by not posting everything your kid does, not posting about their grades or their awards or their sporting event or whatever it might be. Maybe that's how you're going to practice that. Maybe you're not going to post every meal that you go out and eat with your friends. Maybe you're just going to choose to keep your phone in your pocket and enjoy the experience of doing life with folks. Secrecy is a tough thing, but it's something that we need to practice. It's something that we need to make an intentional decision to stay out of the spotlight. And then the last one, sacrifice. So we've got solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy, and sacrifice. And sacrifice is where we willingly give of ourselves to others. Sacrifice can be financial, right? It's where we say, okay, I'm going to choose to do without this thing so that I can give sacrificially over here. Yeah, it hurts because I didn't get to have this meal out, or I didn't get to buy this thing because instead I gave over here. You know, there's giving and then there's sacrificial giving. Frugality connects us to sacrifice, right? Frugality puts us in position to be able to give sacrificially, financially. That's one thing. The kind of the famous story is the widow's mite, right? You've got the rich guy who gives his tenth and it doesn't hurt. Then you've got the widow who gives the last bit she has, and that's sacrificial. And so we're called to consider doing that. You know, what does that look like? I mean, I'm not saying that you put yourself in a position where you're not going to be able to provide for your family and that kind of thing. Because that's part of God's provision, but maybe there are times where we're called to not get something we want, so that we can give in a particular moment. But sacrifice goes beyond financial. It also includes our time, giving your time sacrificially. Time is one of the most valuable and precious resources that we have, and I think we need to ask ourselves, where are we giving our time? You know, are we serving? Are we sacrificially offering ourselves to what is happening in the world and to those who need it? That's an important question for us to ask. Our energy can be sacrificial. Sometimes we need to give of ourselves when we're tired, when we just want a nap, and there are times where we need to sacrifice that. You know, there's other resources, right? Other things that we have. You know, maybe it's a vehicle, maybe it's a truck, maybe, you know, maybe it's a power tool, whatever it might be that we need to offer up sacrificially to someone else. And so sacrifice again pushes us away from a self-centeredness to an other-centeredness. And so I think if you see a theme running through all of these practices of abstinence, what you see are practices that help us to learn contentment. They are practices that shift the focus from ourselves to God and others. I think those are the core things that these practices help us to get to. Because, you know, contentment and shifting the focus off ourselves to God and others, it's not natural. It takes work. It's hard. And so we need to practice it. So, if you want to read more about these, I've posted these as some blog posts on my website, DanielMRose.com, or if you want to support my writing and my work, you can do so by reading these at Medium. You can go to my Medium profile, medium.com/@DanielMRose, and I would really appreciate it. So, how do we learn? How do we learn to love well? Well, one of the ways that we learn to love well is to engage the practices of abstinence. Solitude, silence, fasting, frugality, chastity, secrecy, and sacrifice. They get us ready to love well when the time comes. So until next week, love well, my friends.